In part two of James McFadden's coaching journey, Lewis Irons and Greg Patterson sit down with the Scotland legend to discuss the latter stages of his playing career, his hopes and ambitions now that he embarks on the UEFA Pro licence. But first, they pick up where they left off, discussing Walter Smith's reign as Scotland manager.
Greg, at that point, I'm sure a lot of people still speak about that sort of club mentality that Walter brought into to Scotland at that point. It's almost be like a different sort of coaching for many managers going from club football to international football, but Walter trying to make it similar is obviously what brought a lot of success, as Faddy kind of speaks about, and that's just smart management, I guess, isn't it?
Of course it is, and it's something we spoke a lot about on A licences over the past few months, you know, and B licences. Shelley helped us out, and it was good having the likes of Jack Ross and Robbie Nielsen and Chipper Brian Rice all helping us out. But, you know, then turning to Shelley and getting her perspective about how she manages to do that in an international scene as well, it's probably even more difficult. But as Faddy says, it is maybe changed days now. You know, people are more likely to, unfortunately, spend time, you know, buried in a phone. So it becomes even more difficult, even more prevalent, and probably now as well, that you probably get less time in an international gathering than you would have had back then as well. Yeah,
you know, we'd meet on a Sunday. Your games are Saturday, Wednesday, no matter what. They were Saturday, Wednesday, every single game in the qualifiers. So you'd meet up on a Sunday, and it was before, you know, sports science really took hold as well. So you'd play on a Saturday, you had a double session on Monday. You had a double session on Tuesday. You had a double session on Wednesday. You know, every day we better. You just done double sessions. And it was, apparently it was to beat the boredom, because it's really long. Mm. It's really difficult being in a 10-day camp where you're holed up in the hotel. There's nothing to do because you can't go anywhere. We were at Cameron House, obviously. It's nice and scenic and you can go for a walk, but, you know, there's no much else to do. So it is totally different. I'm pretty sure, you know, from the manager and coaching point of view, you'd rather have that time, extra time, to go and prepare. But it is totally different now to what it was then.
Yeah.
Of course, we'll get to Alex McLeish. I'm looking forward to speaking to you about him, Faddy. I know just how you think of him and obviously worked with him so closely at a number of levels. But of course, at club level, with Birmingham, you get that move at that point. What was that like, getting that move away from Everton, where you've spent a large chunk of your career?
Well, you've skipped on there, Lewis, because Alex McLeish was the Scotland manager, then the Birmingham manager.
I'm jumping through, I'm rattling.
Well, to your research.
Come on, Lewis. Aye, Alex McLeish was a brilliant Scotland manager. He carried it on for you want me to go to Birmingham? Then back to Scotland under Alex. Are you want to go out?
No, go Scotland, go Scotland.
Right, we'll carry on for Walter. So Walter came in, brought in this, you know, mentality, this kind of club atmosphere. And then he left, obviously, to go back to Rangers. And it was hard for us because, you know, he'd come in, I think he came in mid-campaign under Bertie. And then we finished that campaign strong. We played Slovenia away and it was a brilliant team performance. The setup was excellent, allowing, you know, the defenders to go and cover and the attacking players to go and attack. It was just a great balance. And then we started that campaign. We played the Faroe Islands at home. Can't remember if that was a doubleheader. And then Walter left. I think he played the first three games of the campaign. So then Walter left to go to Rangers, and Alex McLeish came in, and it was just very similar continuation of what Walter had done. The group was there in terms of, you know, the atmosphere within the group, but like the standard of training was incredible. When you met up for Scotland, especially when it started to go well, and you've got players that are playing every week and they're playing at a high level and they're playing well. When you get a group together that's like that, plus you've got loads of egos, you've got loads of different characters, you've got guys that want to be the best, it brought the best out in everybody. The training was a brilliant standard, and you carried that into the game. And, you know, when you ask about coaching, your setup and your ethos and the philosophy word, if you're not training to 100%, if you're not putting in, you know, the hard-working training, You won't just turn up on a Saturday and be able to turn that on. And that's, you know, something David Moyes had at Everton. The standard of training was so high, it was ridiculously high, because that's what he wanted. And you carried that on to the game. And we done that for Scotland. Everybody buzzing to be there. Everybody at their best every day in training in terms of their effort. The quality was great as well. And Alec just came in and, you've all met him, he's a brilliant guy. He knows how to get the best out of players. He understands the players. And he finds out what triggers you, what motivates you, how to deal with you. He learns that. He understands that. And it was great. You know, he was just like, obviously serious, but at the same time, he knew when to have a laugh. I remember we were actually preparing for the Italy game, which was absolutely mental, because we knew if we beat Italy, we'd go to the Euros. So we're preparing for the Italy game. And you talk about having the best training facilities. We trained at Dumbarton's pitch, right? And it was absolutely terrible. But we didn't care, because it was a good group of players, and it was the old thing. Good players can play in anything, and I believe that. But anyway, training for the Italy game, and we're doing this. I think we might have been shaping up. We're playing a game across the pitch, and there's these three guys that are stood, at Dumbarton, facing the main stand, there's a big metal fence. So there's three guys stood on top of a van watching training, right? So we're going through our stuff, and big Alec goes, "Hey boys, give the wee guys a wee wave." Right. And I'm like, "Gaffer, you get biggest game of your life on Saturday. Get your heat in the game. Why wave out at people watching training?" He's like, "No, it's the Italians. Give them a wee wave. Look, they're spying on you. That's how scared they are." And I was like, "What's going on here?" And I just want to keep training. But he knew, like, that was obviously giving the players a lift to say, "They're spying on you." And also to take the tension out, to say, "Right, hey, stop training, give the boys a wave." And that probably just summed up the way he approached everything.
Settling the nerves almost, wasn't it?
Brilliant, honestly. He was absolutely brilliant.
I think I was trying to skip on there, Fary, onto Birmingham. I just glaze over that goal he scored against France, Greg. Like, we've heard enough about that.
I never even mentioned it, Lewis.
I know you didn't. But no, we need, obviously, you won't be sick of talking about any moments in your career because of what you've achieved, I'm sure, Fary. But that moment against France, the folklore that's lived on with in Scotland supporters is amazing. But going into that game, it's quite fitting. Obviously, we'll talk about the preparation, but right back at the start of this podcast, letting people play, express themselves. That's an example right there of what can happen when you let someone express themselves, isn't it?
Like, but again, it goes back to like Alex management, I think. Who did we play before that? Ukraine, was it?
Ukraine, I think. It was a 3-1 game, wasn't it?
Ukraine. So the game before that, we played Lithuania, and I was a sub, and I was absolutely fuming. It's like, "Sake, Gaffer, man, I'm playing well, just get me in." And he's like, "Don't worry, you'll come on and make a difference." So I come on and scored a goal, and then just before I went on, he's like, "Hey, go on then, go and show me why you should be starting." And that's what I'm talking about, knowing how to get people, you know, fired up. So I scored, and he says, "Hey, see, told you that was the plan. Keep you on the bench, bring you on, score a goal, we win the game." And then I played against Ukraine, and then obviously the France game. With a wee bit, you know, the preparation was great, as normal, but Kenny Miller wasn't available, and I know that would have been the preferred option for Alec, to play Kenny up front, and maybe myself behind him, or unfortunately, or fortunately, on the bench. But I knew that was maybe his, that would have been the plan, you know, probably for Kenny to be up front to do all the running and for me to play behind. But then Kenny was unavailable. I don't know if he was injured or not. So I knew he had a dilemma. Does he go and put, I think we had Gary O'Connor, Craig Beattie, does one of them go up front and then I'll play behind? Or, and then I'm sure he tells a story. I've heard it a few times, but I need to make sure I get it right. That he had the French, somebody had translated the French newspaper for him. And in the French newspaper, it had the French team and what they were going to play. And it was a flat 4-4-2. And it was Vieira and Makélélé in the midfield. And he says that kind of made his mind up on what he was going to do. So he got the extra man in midfield, put me up front. And see, when you're playing as a lone striker, it's just do your shift for the team. Just chase balls down, be a nuisance, make sure the ball sticks. If you get a chance, make sure your final pass is good enough. And for the first half, I thought we were excellent. You know, obviously everybody wants to talk about the goal, and I'm not really going to complain about it because I'm proud of it. But it was an absolutely unbelievable team performance that night. It was so good. You know, with Graham Alexander playing left back against Frank Ribery, who was lightning, and Greza was at no point in his career, never mind the fact he was in his 30s, at no point in his career did he have any pace. And he absolutely, he kept him in his back pocket the whole game. Defensively, the organisation, Craig Gordon had some unbelievable saves. Throughout the team, we had such a strong team. We had an early blow at the start of the game as well. Dan Fletcher had to go off. And we're like, right, well, Fletch, we know he plays in the big games against the likes of Vieira and Makélélé, and he's going to be a huge miss. But Stephen Pearson came on, and Pirro was absolutely brilliant. And as I said, it was an unbelievable team performance. And to then go on to, at that point, I'm looking at the clock, you're thinking, I've not got long left here. I always get subbed off because I always look tired. I look tired for the start of the game, so I know they're going to be looking at it and saying, right, he's going to come off. So I remember thinking, just if you ever get a chance, just try and get your shot away. Because we trained, the night before the game, you train on the pitch and you use the balls that every federation, you know, uses, whatever their sponsorship is. So I think we were Diadora at the time. And the Diadora boys were like bowling balls. They were terrible. So we were buzzing to go away somewhere, and we got the Adidas ones, and they were flying everywhere. And I always remember, you were hardly hitting them, and they were just flying all over the place. And I thought, if I get a chance, I'm going to shoot, no matter where it's fair. But as the game wore on, I was like, right, I've not even had a shot at goal here. Can I play up front and not have a shot at goal? So I just got my chance to shoot. There was, as I said, Craig Gordon punted it, and as I controlled it, I was expecting contact, so I kind of opened my body up to fend it off. But as soon as I controlled it, I felt that nobody was there. I sensed that it was nobody was there, so I just turned and had a shot. And Fergie's screaming at me for me to pass the ball to him. And even after I had it, I can't say it here because this needs to go out. But he was shouting at me, you know, what you doing? And then obviously the ball goes in, and 10 minutes later, I got subbed off. So I'm glad I managed to get my shot away. But the biggest thing for me was the team performance that night. It was absolutely unbelievable.
Did you know, even though Fergie was in your ears, even when the ball's in midair, did you know as soon as you hit it?
No, I knew I'd had a good connection, but then because it was weird, because like the way the net was, there was like a tape, so it was weird. It was a weird setup. And I knew the goal had got a touch there. And then I think it hit one of the posts of the bar. And I thought, is that actually gone in? It was like a real, probably a split second that felt like 10 seconds to go, is it went in? I thought, I'm just going to run anyway. If I look like an idiot, I'm not like an idiot, then they can bring it back. But it was just a weird, weird feeling. There was too many players in front of me. There was no way I could have got by them all.
Well, I know. I mean, that moment, like just recently we've seen Faddy third in the all-time Scotland players, Greg. That moment, but so many incredible moments in a Scotland jersey that have come from his grounding as a young boy playing in the street, just express himself. That's what makes people love him, that's what makes the fans game. And it's probably, as I said, I think I touched on it, we've not seen players like Faddy in such a long time, and that's, I guess, why it's so important to hear from someone like Faddy to encourage coaches and players to do that and to bring more of that to the game.
No, absolutely. And even, you know, I'm thinking back to my own career now, and when I started delivering coach education, you know, just delivering, you know, level one to the grassroots, the amount of times, you know, the stories that Faddy's recalling there, and the amount of times I'd have used those types of stories for those coaches, you know, what would have been of James McFadden now had a young grassroots coach told him to stop passing, to stop dribbling, to stop doing this, to stop, I'm saying stop passing. He's saying he never passed in the first place. But you know what I mean? If the coach had kept saying, don't do this, don't, or pass the ball, and Faddy doesn't develop, and the dribbling skills are developed, he doesn't develop that kind of off-the-cuffness if there's such a phrase, that eventually leads to that iconic goal. And I think, is it 15 years later? Was it 15 years to the day last week or something like that? And everybody can remember where they were that night. Everybody can remember where they were when that goal went in.
I think on that, Greg, it's not about allowing everybody to do what they want, but I think we're getting bogged down in trying to create this perfect player.
Yeah.
But they're all the same. You know, they can control it and they can pass it. They can pass it 5 yards. But it's about being different, because everybody's different. They've got different skill sets. But I think it looks like we're developing a lot of similar type players that as they go into the senior game, they'll not do anything because they don't think for themselves. I keep saying it. They don't think for themselves. And there's too many of them that are pigeonholed into a position. Like, if you've got your two best players at the club and they're centre midfielders, but the two of them are sitting midfielders because they're not allowed to do anything else, only one of them's going to play.
Yeah.
But the other one might be just as good because that's all he knows. I'm a CDM. That's what I do. I sit and I screen and I pass it side to side. They need more, you know, more than just pigeonholed into a position, pigeonholed into a style of play, 100%. A style of learning.
Yep.
They need different, you said it, a different experience. It might be a different voice.
I'm back to that, different experiences, absolutely. And you know, funny, I was listening to, who was I listening to? It was Peter Grant I was listening to at the weekend, I think, and he chatted about, you know, the amount of football that kids aren't playing anymore. You know, the school's football's gone from when we were all kids. We all played school football, probably. That's gone. So they don't have, if they're not playing, as you say, Faddy, if there's someone who's very similar like them in an academy and they're not playing in the academy games, then where the hell are they playing? They're not playing.
Even the academy structure, it's all this game time and minutes and equal minutes. And I get the argument for that, but to help somebody who's maybe no deserving of the time, it's no that I know that's tough and it sounds really harsh that everybody should get the same, but unfortunately that doesn't happen. You don't get to a first team environment and the manager says, oh, you played 30 minutes last week and I need to balance it. You don't need to balance it, you need to play the best players. And I know that's difficult at that age group, but if you've got a player that you feel there's development in, then you stick by them. But the best development for any player is to play games. You can train as much as you want. You look at some of the games coming back with no crowds. Some players are thriving on it because there's less pressure and it's maybe a slower tempo.
Yeah.
But that's no real football. Football's about pressure and making decisions under pressure, coping with that pressure. And if everybody knows when they turn up on a Saturday, I'm going to get my 60 minutes, then there's nothing, you know, really for them to aim for. Doesn't matter if they play well, doesn't matter if they have a poor game, they'll get their 60 minutes, they'll get their development, which I can totally see the argument for, but as you get older, maybe 13, 14, you need to start saying, look, you're playing, you're doing well. Even if they've a bad game, I'm not saying then you go, right, you're dropped, wee man. That's when the development comes, to continue that process. But to turn around and say, everybody gets the same because it creates equal opportunity, It doesn't. If anything, it creates, well, it doesn't matter how I do in training. If I'm rubbish in training, if I don't put it in, can't be bothered tonight, I'll still get my 60 minutes at the weekend. There's no incentive for them. They can go and turn up, I'll get my minutes. See, if I don't get my minutes, I'll moan about it. Why I'm not getting my minutes. You said I'd get minutes. I'm due these minutes. There needs to be a balance of getting the right development environment, but also so that the players aren't getting too much.
Yeah. It's a huge debate, Lewis. I think Faddy's only about 24 in your list of notes there, so that's another huge debate that we could go on all day for. I think you've got another 10 years of his playing career still to go, have you?
Well, I was going to say, I was McLeish briefly there, Faddy, and obviously I want to then speak about you working alongside Scotland, but we'll get to the coaching stuff now a bit. Obviously, you've come back to Scotland after a spell. You've gone back to Everton, Sunderland, come back to Motherwell for a second spell. Look at how I've worked the way through there. No, but you're coming back to Scotland, you're coming back to a club like Motherwell, must have been a special moment for you to come back to a club that I know has a place in your heart, particularly starting your career there.
Yeah, as you know, when I was at Birmingham, I had a serious injury and I never really recovered from it. But, you know, I get the chance to come back to Motherwell, and I was training at Motherwell, and all my mates were still there. You know, the people at the club were all the same. It just had the right feel for me. And I was just trying to keep myself fit. And then I went away and signed for Sunderland. Didn't work out there, and I came back, and I was just like, right, that's it. I'm just coming back to Motherwell. I want to, you know, give something back while I still can. I was never the same player as when I got injured, but I still had a lot to offer, and it was a team that were flying, and I just wanted to come back and help out as much as I could. And I said that when I left, I always wanted to go back, and I'm glad that I did. I went back, and then I went back, and then I went back. I just couldn't get away from the place, but that's just, you know, extremely grateful. And I'm delighted, you know, I'm really happy that I started my career there, because it's a brilliant club. It's still brilliant, still run really well, some great people involved. And it's just the type of club that has that effect on you. You know, loads of players leave and come back, and it doesn't happen at every club, that. So to go back, obviously the fans are absolutely brilliant. They're brilliant with me. I used to laugh and joke, because, oh, I remember your first time round, you were excellent, you were this and that. And I'm like, you don't remember that, right? You know, obviously I done well, I says, but there were some games where I was absolutely horrendous. But it's nice that the fans remember the good parts, and I'm just delighted that I get a chance to go back and actually contribute. You know, we finished second 2 years in a row, actually, and it was unbelievable. Honestly, what a time. I loved every minute of being there, and I would do it all again if it was to pan out, because I told me at the start of my career that's how it would pan out. I'd have been absolutely delighted.
Yeah. You mentioned that you went back, and then you went back. But when you did go back, with Martin, you obviously, that period where you obviously, of course, were playing and assistant manager alongside him, how much of a part in your career did Mark McGee play in terms of what you learnt from him?
Oh, brilliant. You know, I went back to Motherwell initially short term, and then I got injured. I broke my ankle in training. So I was just... And I don't think I came back that season. So I was coming back doing my rehab. I was in all during the summer, and I was out of contract. So I was in the physio, Adam Stokes, was doing my rehab all through the summer. And then Steve Robinson left.
Aye.
Robbo left. So Mark needed an assistant. But I was just... trying to get fit. I was at the end stage of my rehab, so I was running, so I was going down to training and watching training, and just as things were happening in training, I'd be shouting encouragement to the boys or speaking to some of the players. And I think just every day for a few days that was the case. I was always like that, you know. I took that on as I got older in my career to try and help young players, to try and help any player that's willing to listen, and just try and show them a different mindset, or a different, you know, look at it from a different point of view. So I always done that, and I was always encouraging the young boys, because I remember being a young boy. I remember the ball rolling under my foot under Billy Davis. I remember wanting to jump in a hole in the ground and knock him back out. I remember all that, and I managed to deal with that, but not everybody's got the same kind of coping mechanism, the same mentality. So it was always a case of look at the reaction of the young player. How does he feel after he makes a mistake? Can you tell him, hey, come on, that was slack. Can you tell him, look, get your head up, try it again, go again? So I think that was just, you know, I was walking down at training, the boys are away warming up. Mark McGee just says to me, have you done your coaching badges? I says, no, I've started my B, but I've actually not got round to finishing it. He says, all right. He says, what about coaching? I says, I just want to keep playing. I don't really want to coach. I'm fine at the minute. And then he left it, and then I was in the car. He was with the car school, so I was in the car, and I says, I think I've just been interviewed for the assistant manager's job. I was only kidding. I said, I think I've just been interviewed. He's like, and it was Stevie Hamill, Laz, and they're like, shut up. I says, he was asking like weird questions, the timing of it and whatever. So then the next day, he pulled me in, and he says, look, do you want to be my assistant? And I was like, I think it was 33 at the time. And I thought, oh, this is a bit earlier than I imagined. As I said, I'd started my B license. I never, at that point, I hadn't finished it. And it took me aback. And I says, well, I really want to keep playing. And Mark's like, well, just do both. And I was like, oh, all right then. It's like I had a few days to think about it because it was a big decision, you know. I'd left a dressing room with a lot of my mates. You know how loud I can be in that dressing room, Lewis. So to go from being, you know, right in the middle of the dressing room to being a coach, it was something that I had to think about. And as I said, I'd started my coaching badges, but I was getting them just in case to see how, you know, how I felt when I finished my career. So when the opportunity came up, got instinct straight away was take it, what an opportunity. But then you kind of talked yourself out, and I was thinking, right, I want to keep playing. I won't be able to concentrate on playing and coaching. I need to, you know, try and find the balance. And in the end, it took me 3 or 4 days, and I phoned Mark and says, I'll take the job. You know, I'm happy. I says, you'll need to help me because... And I know football, I can offer my opinions, but when it comes to, you know, coaching and putting the sessions on, I don't have that confidence at the minute. And he says, no, look, don't worry about it, we'll be fine. And I think that was it, you know, July. I think it was during pre-season. I can't really remember. I think it was during pre-season. And then Mark was great, you know, he was just always talking. You know him well, Lewis. Just a brilliant guy, so open, brilliant mentor for me to show me. And it was more about having belief and no getting, you know, overthink things or trying, you know, like if I was in late, he'd come in and say, why are you still here? It's like, oh, I'm just here to make sure everything's right. It's like, don't be here because you think you need to be here. If you're done, you're finished, go home. Relax, we'll be fine. And it was great for that. And, you know, I thought it was going to work well in terms of me playing, but I soon found out that I wasn't going to play too much. But it was great. Like, Mark was involved with the Scotland setup, so he'd go away for international duty, he'd go away for a week, miss a week's training. I think that was before the old Thursday games and all that stuff. So he'd be away maybe 8-9 days, and he'd never tell me anything, never say do this, do that. He's like, right, you're on your own. I'm like, what do you mean I'm on my own? He says, you're on your own, just get on with it. I was like, what do you want me to do? He says, do whatever you want. So I'm like, oh my god. First you know, the first time he went away, I couldn't sleep, changed what I was going to do. It was horrible. Didn't sleep, dry mouth, because at that time as well, you had like Keith Lasley, Stevie Hamill, Steve McManus. I think Las was doing his pro. He might be finished it. And Hammy and Mick were on their pro.
They were, eh?
And I'm like trying to put a session on, knowing fine well, first of all, they're my mates, so if I mess up, they'll help me. Yeah. But also that they're still going to judge me, even though they're my mates, and say, right, what has he got? Aye. You know, and that was, you know, that's a huge part of the psychology going into it. You know, your stuff. And if you mess up, I couldn't have asked for a better group of guys, because they understood, no matter what I'd done, they tried their best. Because they knew that if they tried their best, the rest of the players would try their best. So it was great for me. And I used to phone Mark and say, oh, it was brilliant. The boys were excellent. They worked hard. And he's after a while, he goes, you know, you tell me that every single time. I'm no there. As if I'm sticking up for myself or I'm sticking up for the players. But it was great. He just left me to it. And nothing was ever too much for him. He was never stressed out, or he never showed that he was stressed out. And he just had this thing about him that you just wanted to learn. You wanted to take in as much as you could. And it was like coming into big decisions. He'd say, right, I've got this idea. And before I took the job, a few people would say, now listen, he comes up with some wacky ideas. You need to make sure that you try and rein him in a bit. And I'm like, oh, don't worry, I'll say it. So he's come up with this idea, and he went through every reason why he wanted to do it. It was a change of shape. I'm going to do this, I'm going to have these will do this, and went through everything. And I goes, that's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. It was unusual, but it was brilliant. Yeah. So then he goes, and then after I agreed with him, I thought, does that mean that I don't know what, like, does that mean I'm wacky as well? Because he explained every single part of the formation, the game plan, I totally bought it, and it nearly worked. It was against Celtic. It nearly worked. We'd done really well against them at Parkhead. Yeah. And it was brilliant. But see, like, he'd come in and we'd go, right, we need to pick the team for the morrow. He says, I've got an idea of what my team is. I've got two positions I'm not sure about. Tell me what you think. He says, but before you tell me, I'm just going to write what I think before you tell me what you think. So I'm like, right, okay. It was like two players. I can't remember who it was. And I says, right, I think we should go with him. And he just lifts his hand up and goes, that's exactly what I've got. But I thought it was brilliant because he didn't need to write it down. That he could have said, oh, that's what I think as well. Or he could have went, no, what are you talking about? Yeah. But it was almost like saying, right, we'll give you a wee bit of a control. But he had brilliant respect for me. He showed me loads of respect. He helped me every single day. And it was great for me because hugely experienced manager. He had no problem with bringing on a rookie in terms of coaching. And he helped me every single day. He was excellent.
Yeah. It's fascinating, Greg, when I'm sure there's a lot of people listening to this podcast that are coaches or people that want to be coaches down the line or whatever they may be, but a lot of people might not realise as well the pressure and the stress that can go on a coach when, particularly early in your coaching career, Fabi, when you're up at night thinking about a session the next day. Like, to people that might not be a big thing, but to put on a session, there's so much for a coach that can become a lot of pressure.
I think we've probably spoke about it before, have we not, on this podcast, Lewis, that it becomes probably all-encompassing. Even if you're working at the grassroots game or, you know, even under, you've got an under-12 team or whatever, you're probably thinking about those players that Faddy's just explained there with Mark McGee. You're probably thinking about who will I play this week because you know the opposition's a bit better, a bit worse or whatever. And, you know, you're probably, that's running through your head as you're driving to and from your work, you know, as a grassroots coach. So 100%, that's magnified. Magnified 10 times probably when it's your full-time job and results are on the line and of course the media and the fans and everything else, and you know the board are saying you need a win and whatever else is happening on this. Yeah, it's absolutely, it's a huge part of it, of course.
I think as well when you play you turn up to training and everything's set up and sometimes it doesn't work or it's a bad day or whatever, and as a player you turn and go, that was absolutely rubbish. I bet he's just flung that together. That was terrible.
And
then you're on the coaching side and you go, oh my God, how much stress, lack of sleep.
Yeah.
I just hope it goes well. And you just have a new respect for coaching and for what actually goes into it, every single detail you need to put. And if you go and you give your instruction, you forget something and you start panicking that the players pick up on it, or if the players come up and say, oh, you said this and it was that. It's all this kind of stress that you've no idea about as a player. You just think, sometimes, or most of the time, I would moan my way through training. It helped me get through it. I was a moaner. But without having any, you know, realisation of what that was doing to the coach that put the session on, you know, you're just going, oh, no, I know this again. Oh my God, this is rubbish. And the coach, you can just, obviously being in that side now, I know he's probably inside going, oh, God, he just shut up, will he?
Up a night,
shut up. No idea the stress that's went into this.
Oh, they won't. Now that you are at that side of it, Fanny, it'll be interesting to see how you deal with younger versions of yourself. But obviously, the opportunity then comes up, I'm sure, like, for anybody, but particularly you, a dream opportunity to coach your country and to work alongside Alex again, who I know how highly you think of. And what was that conversation like when he comes in and that opportunity comes up?
Well, it was bizarre. You know, I was sitting in a restaurant and I just got a text from him saying, do you want to come work with me at Scotland? And I was like, what? I text him back and says, oh, have you got the job, like? He says, it's not confirmed, but I think I'm getting it. What do you think? I was like, absolutely. Absolutely. So I spoke to him and he's like, yeah, I want you to come in. I want you, you know, you've no long finished. I says, well, I've not actually finished playing, but some will argue I finished a long time ago, Gaffer. But he says to come in and, you know, be that link. You're fresh out of playing. You've got coaching experience. And I just want you to come in and help me with the players and help me as well. And he was absolutely brilliant. I know it didn't work out for him, but, you know, he was brilliant. He gave me real, you know, no control, but he showed a real respect for what I could bring to him on the coaching side. But in terms of, like, you know, looking at players, going to watch players, dealing with some of the players for squad selection, you know, picking the team, he was brilliant. He was so good for me. I had a great relationship with him as a player. And I learned so much, you know, just going in and working close with him. And I'm gutted for him that it didn't work out. You know, for me, it was a dream to go and coach at international level for Scotland. Everybody knows how much it meant to me to play for Scotland. So it was just, you know, I couldn't believe that I was getting this opportunity. And I'm just gutted for Big Alec that it didn't work out. But sometimes, you know, that's what happens and you've got to learn for that. But it was an amazing experience for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you were talking about the atmosphere that Walter made, where he had, you know, McCoist there and Burns, and that kind of, it felt like that's a similar sort of thing that maybe Alex was forming with you there as well.
He was trying to do that. And I think that, you know, the difficulty is I mentioned it earlier, like when I played at the start, you'd 5-6 days build up to one game. And you were together, you had, you know, time to get to know each other. And the squads, there was changes, obviously, from squad to squad, but you had the nucleus of a squad. Yeah. Whereas we felt, you know, coming in, people were looking for something different, and we had to try and find, you know, some players. Scott Brown had retired, obviously. And we had to, you know, try and build, although I says you don't get time, you ultimately don't get time, but you're trying to find, you know, new players that can come in and have an impact. We had a lot of friendly games organised that anybody in their right mind wouldn't have organised. Let's be honest, nobody's going to pick to go to Peru, Mexico in June, because players ultimately are unavailable. You know, it's the way that football is now. If you've got players at big clubs and players that play 50, 60 games a season, to ask them to go to Peru and Mexico for two friendly games is crazy. And the travel that was involved, the organisation, the travel due to circumstance, you know, the people that work at the SFA that organise the travel, done a brilliant job in the end, but it was a problem that we didn't need. So, you know, at the start, it was tough because you need to deal with all these, you know, scenarios. And then it was just trying to get consistency of a squad. We couldn't really get certain players that were fit and available. And again, it goes back to the Thursday, Monday schedule of games, Friday, Tuesday, whatever, Friday, Monday, whatever it is. It's just impossible for players nowadays to play Sunday with their clubs. 13 players getting into a huge qualifier on a Thursday. You need to travel. It's impossible to get the preparation done. So it's a tough job. And because of these, you know, the kind of camps that you have, it's difficult to get everything across. So you need to try and fine-tune what you want to get across, how you're going to do it, and try and build that consistency of, you know, a nucleus of a squad. We've not really had that. And I hope that Steve Clark can get it, because when we have a best players available, we're a very good side, and we just need to get that consistency to build the confidence. And hopefully, you know, I know the performances weren't great in the last couple of games, but sitting top of the group, we've got a chance to go and build. I think the players will be fitter and stronger for the playoff game, and I really think we'll go and win the game. So it's tough because you're trying to win, you know, your double header with the least amount of preparation possible. And it's, you know, you go on any of your courses, it's all about preparation.
Yeah.
Preparation to get, you know, everything about the team you're playing against. How can you get that information to the players? You can have as many meetings as you want. We've spoken about it. The practical side's where they learn. And if you don't go on the pitch and show them scenarios, it's hard. It's hard to deal with that. Plus, you're coming up against players you don't really know. So when your preparation is limited, it's tough to get the performances.
Of course. It's fascinating, Greg, when you hear just all the experiences that Fadi's had in his playing career and already in a coaching career. And he's obviously starting out in the pro now as well, that not many people come in with that amount of experience into the pro license, that's for sure. There's a lot ahead for Fadi going into it.
No, absolutely. And I speak about that a lot. You know, that huge amount of experience multiplied by 20. You know, the likes of Kenny Miller been on that course as well, and Darren O'Day, and, you know, and other guys whose names are escaping me just now, Kevin Thompson's another. And, you know, there's just all these names with huge experience. So it's not necessarily about what myself, Andy Malky and Scott Gemmell put on it. You know, it's a lot about what these guys bring to it as well. And sometimes just... Fadi phoned me last week and said there'll be a few arguments in this group because there's a few opinions, and that's great. There will be debate, but, you know, to be able to put them in that, you know, other people would call that a learning environment, and producing, you know, for us to produce the correct learning environment. But the learning environment for that 20 people to get together, sticking them in a room and having some hotly debated topics round about coaching, all the things we've touched on throughout this, you know, team building and preparation, and, you know, how you reflect on a game and, you know, prepare for a game. You know, as you say, Lewis, the experience we're in that room will just be fantastic. And you know, what Fadi probably doesn't realise as well is that, you know, him coming over and sitting beside me at my desk when he worked with the national team, when he worked with Alec, that I would take little bits from that, and that would help us form maybe what we did on a C licence or a B licence, you know. So all that just keeps feeding, hopefully, what we do in coach education as well.
Yeah. Fadi, are you excited to get going on the pro licence?
For all the reasons that Greg says, you know, when I done my B licence, you go in and go, right, what is this all about? After a couple of days of thinking, this isn't for me, I'm going home, you dig in and you get, because what Greg's talking about, the people on the course, it's, I think that people get caught up in what you've been taught, you know, what's the structure? Forget about, you know, all that stuff. There is no right way or wrong way of doing it. There's no one way of doing it, sorry. It's about finding the best for you. And by getting these experiences, you can learn off of everybody. I think that's the most important thing. You don't look and say, ah, what am I going to learn off of him? I'm better than him. I know this and that. Because somebody knows something you don't. And you can actually take that from everybody, whether it be, you know, how they're speaking to people, how they set up their training, how they deliver it. You might look at it and say, that was brilliant, but I'd maybe do it a bit different. That's you learning. That's you analysing what they're doing and trying to, you know, make that what you would do. So I think going on these courses is great when you get the guys together. It was, you know, I really enjoyed it when it started a couple of weeks ago. I thought it was really good. I thought it would be difficult on Zoom, but I really enjoyed it because as soon as the guys are on speaking, you revert to your experience and you think, oh, I've come across that, or I never thought about that. Maybe if I'd use that in this instance, that might have helped me. So it's been really good, and I'm looking forward to, I know we're going backwards with the COVID, but I'm looking forward to actually getting together and getting to meet the guys, because that's where you learn as much as anything. It's their opinion against yours. And you try and... The arguments are great. And I know, because Scott McDonald's on it as well, Lewis. Scott, Kenny, Daz, Kevin Thompson. Oh, it's going to be brilliant. Honestly, I'm looking forward to actually being in a room where you kind of just mute somebody or kick them off. There is no mute button when you're in a room. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. But it's a brilliant experience. It's something that I'm looking forward to. It's teaching me new things already. You know, I was on the computer but I've had to learn. I obviously had to do my presentation. I need to type stuff up to do my assignments, and I've got the analysis stuff and that to do as well. So there are things that you can learn every experience in life, and it's just what you take from it and how you take that forward.
Yeah. I have to say, when Greg sent me the list of names, I did, I was like, oh, yes.
Brilliant. It's good because you can throw a wee hand grenade in and just let them off out.
You don't need to throw it in at all, Faddy. Don't kid yourself. You're no need to throw it in.
I'm looking forward to it. But no, it's been great. I've really enjoyed it. I was the same when I done my A-licence. I loved the A-licence. I loved, you know, because I had that bit of experience of coaching, and it's not to say I came on and thought, I know everything. It was just I had more confidence in delivering what I was going to deliver. But again, you got to meet different people. And I just love being a runner as well, just doing all the sessions and trying to help the boys out as much as possible. And that's what it's about. When you get on these courses, you're on it to make yourself better, but you're on it to help everybody else get better as well. It's really good when you can, like you should say, if somebody comes up and goes, oh, thanks for that, that was great. That's good. You know you're helping out, and it's not just all about you. You need to be there for the group. And ultimately, when you go on and people say, right, the pro license is about management and about leading, and ultimately you carry that yourself, and when you're in that chair, you're making the decisions. But you can help, get help along the way to make those decisions, and you can certainly help people along the way as well.
I've just realised how long we've actually been going here. This is definitely
longest ever.
But on a serious note, Greg, any final thoughts? I know we have been chatting a lot longer than I probably would have wanted to keep you, Faddy, but thanks for digging in with us there.
No, it's all right.
I don't think I have. I could probably just sum up by the same way I started it, you know. And I knew Faddy would be like this, and I didn't think it'd be any different. And it's just fantastic to hear all these stories, to hear his passion for the game and how he hopes he wants to, you know. And that's something that keeps coming out in all the episodes that we do as well. It's the person's, whoever we're interviewing, it's their ambitions to achieve more, to be as good as they possibly can be, making that transition into coaching. But first and foremost, there's that love for the game, isn't there? And there's that passion for the game that hopefully is the overriding factor that will lead them to doing so.
Absolutely. Faddy, it's been a pleasure having you on, mate. I appreciate it.
Cheers.
Top man, thank you.
Really enjoyed it.